Today, we're going to talk about the false dichotomy between play and academics. Getting a lot of questions from new homeschoolers, particularly for what we call the preschool years. And there seems to be a lot of confusion. I want to allay that. But also, it comes to me that there is this false dichotomy, and I'll unpack that for you and clear away the clouds of confusion. And since I am hearing so many questions from new homeschoolers, I do want to make you aware that I have two packets for new homeschoolers. One is about homeschooling directly, and the other one is about how to teach reading and writing and what to do if it gets difficult. So you got two packets. You just come to the website at overcominglearningproblems.org or greatshalom.org, same site. Look on the top. You see the menu. It's old style. Just click in the shop and you'll see there's a packet of audio files for you. Please get them, and we'll give you some other resources if you wait to the end and come to the show notes. Okay. Okay, welcome back, everybody. I'm getting a lot of questions from new homeschoolers, particularly about play versus academics. So it comes like this. Oh, my child is X years old, and I really want to do homeschooling with him, but I don't know what curriculum. And then some comments come. Oh, no, he's much too young to be teaching him anything. You need to just play. And then somebody else says, well, do these worksheets. And somebody else says, well, I like XYZ curriculum. Okay. So, there is an ongoing debate in early childhood, play versus academics. And there are some curriculum that are very 2D, even for young children, because they're easier to sell and because they go in our mindset. But basically, both of these ideas are wrong. And if you get, and that's why I'm talking about a false dichotomy. They both have their place. They both have a smidgen of truth. But if you get caught up in an argument of one school of thought versus another, you're lost in a false dichotomy because the real truth is not in either one of them. All right. So a child less than 7 forever has not been developmentally ready to sit in a desk and work with paper for hours. That's just wrong. In 1913, children started, or 1900, or 1880, or more, further back, children would start school. They would come to school, sit in desks that were screwed to the floor, and they might even be chained into the desks in some countries, and they would learn how to read in Greek and Latin. Now, we know better than that. And yet, we seem to be far stupider, too. But anyway, so there were several cutting-edge scientists. One was Itard, one was Seguin, one was Froebel. And then there was Montessori, who said, no, young children should not be chained in desks. And Montessori put together the others. Froebel is the guy who started what we call kindergarten. But anyway, the idea is that children can move about, use their senses, use their natural inclinations, and if the environment is prepared, then they can learn. And you don't have to follow Montessori hook, line, and sinker, but this is the history. Okay, and what goes on in the United States with Montessori, that's a whole nother thing. So don't get so triggered that you don't listen to what I'm saying. The point here is that children can learn things that are the foundation for their academics without doing 2D academic work. So learning colors by matching what spools of thread or paint chips. You understand, when I say a paint chip, I mean a piece of paper that you get at the paint store. So you can match red to red and blue to blue. But once the child gets pretty used to that, they can be matching forest green to forest green and chartreuse to chartreuse. You get the story. Okay, so they can be matching flowers to flowers. When I was very young, I had a very young child. We didn't have much money, but I could get two seed catalogs, and then my daughter could be matching the pansies to the pansies and the broccoli pictures to the broccoli pictures. So matching and sorting. So maybe you have different kind of beans in a little bowl, and you can put the black beans in one portion of the egg carton, and you could put pinto beans in the other portion, and that starts discriminating one from the other, sorting, but also the pincer movement of the finger and the thumb, and of course that develops the brain. And you can devise many games like this. Well, we're going to call them games. Dr. Montessori would call it didactic apparatus, but we don't talk like that now. You might have in 1900, but anyway. So, or how about this? Have a little tray, have a couple of plastic bowls, and a good size silver spoon, and some cotton balls, and the child is practicing their manual dexterity by spooning the cotton balls from one bowl to another. Okay, there are lots of things that you can think up like this. And also teaching the child how to do things directly, like buttoning their sweater. Well, there are dressing frames that you can buy that, you know, have it on a frame, like a little picture frame, and have buttons that are just perfect to learn, and a zipper and lacing and so forth. But if you can't do that, you can, you know, put a sweater over the back of the chair and show the child how to actually manipulate the buttons, and you can have them dress their teddy bear or whatever. So what we're talking about is practical life lessons and sensorial lessons. This is what to start with when you have a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, okay? And then typically at about age 4, children are very interested in reading. And, you know, I am trained Montessori, but it seems very practical to me. You simply disambiguate. Instead of waiting until they're 7 and then lumping reading, composing, writing, learning the sounds and the letters, putting that all together in a big fat mosh and making them do it all in 2D, to me that just seems like torture. If you, when they're interested, give them letters, cut out letters, give them sandpaper letters, and so they trace the shape with their finger. There, it's a no-fail method. If they do that, and they give them an A, ah, so you're teaching them the sound and not the name, right? And trace the sandpaper, or, you know, if you're buying it, it's their smooth little beads on the board. But if you're cheap, or if you're less moneyed, like I was, that I cut out blue and pink poster board and cut out sandpaper and glued it on. But anyway, so that's the sandpaper letter. So they learn how to write the symbols. And then cut out letters. And I remember how much fun my grandson had when he discovered this. And then he could build words. He had cut out letters. And you don't have to buy them. You can. They're perfect if you do. But could also, how about the Laurie puzzles that are plastic and soft? And anyway, it was wonderful. That also teaches the orientation of the letters. But when he discovered he could form words and that I could read them, even if they weren't sensible spelling, right, that he could put words down, and it was a huge revelation. We just had so much fun. We just sat on the floor and he would put out words and I would read it. We just thought that was hilarious fun. And then from there you can move to reading. So you match little cards, you know, one says bed, B-E-D. You can sound that out, and then you have a little picture of a bed, and it can be matched. And some very simple words in a box, and another box of some simple words, and on, and then you take those words, and I made little books, so we could read, you know, Ed goes to bed. And so, of course, the first one were just simple words that were all WYSIWYG words. You know, English is not WYSIWYG. So you're familiar with WYSIWYG as a term from computing science. What you get, what you see is what you get. So you want words that can be phonetic. And, of course, eventually you're going to have the child memorize words like said, S-A-I-D. You can memorize that. But mostly it's phonics, right? And so just follow the child's interest. When the child is really interested at four, I remember that I was very interested at four. I would take the newspaper ads for groceries, and I could see the letters and the numerals there, and so I would trace them. And mother would say, no, I'm not going to teach you how to read. Let your first grade teacher do something. Meaning, the system is set up for you to learn this at seven, so just because you want to learn this at four is nothing doing. So that was her view. But that's stunting the growth. That's stunting the growth, so forget that. Now, children are maturing later these days, and if it's not true that your child is interested at four, do not press them. And why do I say that? Because the last thing you want to teach them is that learning is boring. Do not teach them that learning is boring. So if they're three and they need to move around and they want to continue to explore their world and they want to paint and you make them sit down and do worksheets, what you have taught them is school is terribly tedious. And there's no reason that a three-year-old needs to be sitting doing worksheets. Just not. So worksheets are very lucrative for the people who publish them. And worksheets are conventional. So people think about worksheets, but there is no reason why worksheets are that great. On the other hand, having said that, there are some wonderful books that you can, and I remember thinking that this was just fun, like match. You know, so which one of these is not like the others? Exit, right? Or find the difference between these two pictures. I thought that was wonderful. My sister and I thought those were wonderful. Even into our elementary school years, we would get that particular magazine that had those pictures, and we would, it was a game for us. But it sharpened our academic skills. And of course, read to your children. Of course. And long before they can read, they're going to enjoy books if you read to them. So every night, maybe, before bedtime prayers, have a book. That's great. And it was a wonderful, dear thing that My father wanted to read to my daughter and would when they were together, but we didn't live in the same town, so he didn't always get to do that. So he chose a fairy story book, something very common and normal, and he recorded it and used a sound, I think perhaps a spoon on a crystal glass, for when you turn the page. So he would read it and then ding, and so my daughter would know to turn the page. So he could do that just as if he, almost like if she were sitting on his lap and he was reading to her in person. So absolutely read. Everybody would agree with reading, okay? And I will go so far as that. Now, I'm not a big believer in giving computers to the children. That has a number of potential downfalls. And so I would much prefer that you give them books on paper. Okay, so that's a false dichotomy. Don't get into this play versus academics. Instead, give them academic foundations that they think are play. And when they get very interested in something, and they'll sit down and attend. And that will train their attention. And it will not be torturous. It will just be part of maturing. So I hope, relieved you of the false dichotomy. And there are other false dichotomies that you want to be aware of. For instance, if you're a preschool educator, you're probably into the argument of art or craft. And some preschool educators say, no, you can never tell a child how to do something. They must express themselves. It must be art. Well, false dichotomy. Why can't children learn how to do some art and do some craft? So, yeah, let's just put some finger paints out, get a smock on the child, cover the whole table with newsprint, and let them go to town expressing themselves. Or maybe at an easel, they can paint whatever it is they like, and it doesn't really matter. They're expressing themselves, great. But then there might be other opportunities where you tell them how to build it. For instance, have a simple picture of a dog, cut out the pieces of the dog, and show them how to paste the dog on the paper so it makes a picture. Okay, so that's not art. That's craft. Good. Why do we have to stay in one or the other? Or maybe you want to teach a child to sew, or any number of things. Craft and art both. And preschool educators will get all wrapped up in knots about talking with the children about the painting. Really, none of this is helpful. You just say, tell me about your picture. But if you can tell that it's a painting of them in front of their house, you can admit that you know that, for heaven's sakes. Okay. But, so it's okay to be conventional and it's okay to be creative. No more false dichotomies. Okay. So I hope that I have encouraged you as a homeschooler, observe your child, support your child, prepare the environment, give them enrichment, and yes, you know that they need to learn their colors and their letters. And if you want to do the usual thing of showing them their colors and drilling and singing the alphabet song, well, that's fine. But there are a lot more creative ways of doing things and will enrich the situation a great deal, because just singing the alphabet song doesn't really teach you everything you need to know about those letters. It does teach you the order of letters, so you can file later when you're grown up, and you know, learning the various color names. Okay, but that doesn't satisfy learning everything that a three-year-old needs to learn, and nor is it an adequate foundation for academics, although I don't know, it seems to be that's what has always been traditionally taught. Okay, no more false dichotomies. But you don't have to be all upset. A few minutes a day for a three-year-old is fine. You don't have to have a homeschool day for these children. Now, once they become older, like 6, 7, they're going to want that. They're going to want some sit-down time. And again, you don't have to make them sit down all day. You would be surprised how little on-task time there is in school, and therefore how quickly a homeschool academic day can happen. But, you know, you could get a great scope and sequence, get a good curriculum, and don't worry. Okay. Yes, but which one? Yes, I know. That's a big deal. That's why I wrote Learn at Home for Great Shalom, so you can think about all the things you need to teach and how you need to teach them, and then go out and buy curriculum. But if you want my very quick and dirty answer, I will say that my Father's World curriculum does check all my boxes, and so I don't have any hesitancy in recommending it. And they do have preschool curriculum, and it is for a very short time, every day or every week, and it does have some manipulables, meaning things that go in the children's hands. It's not all 2D. Of course, there is a book for you to read, to teach out of, so it's easy. It has the Bible integrated, and it's good pedagogically, and it's tested for some years now, so I recommend it. Tell them I sent you. Okay, so I hope I have settled these big questions for mothers who are homeschooling their children in what we call preschool years. We need a better term for that. Anyway, because certainly they're learning. But anyway, our little ones, I understand your questions, and I'm so glad I heard those questions. But also, preschool educators get all caught up in it, and it's a trick of the enemy. Don't get caught up in a this or that, this or that, this or that, this or that, because that whole argument is set up, that frame is set up so you don't see the both and or the something else. And there's always both and there's always something else. There's a better thinking skill. You see, if you make a straw man out of one, and then you don't really tell about the downsides of the other, then you can look like, da, 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 I'm the savior of the world, you have to follow me. But that's really a trick of tyranny. That's how the bad kind of leaders. they don't lead, they herd by trickery. All right, so it's called false dichotomies. Like, you've got to do this, or you've got to do that. Well, there's probably some truth in both sides and some downside of both sides, and what you want to take is what's true. And maybe there's other possibilities that they want you not to think about because you're busy fighting. So, you know, Tweedledee and Tweedledum leading into a fight so they can pick your pocket while you're not looking. Or in other words, Marx said, I don't care about science. I just want to increase conflict, because I think that make the world a better place. Yeah, that's not a direct quote, but that's pretty close. And that was in the early pages of Das Kapital, which you might not be able to find unless you get an old paper copy. Okay. Because I tried. I tried getting it online so I could get that citation, and just couldn't do it in the PDFs, but I know I read it in spring of 2020 to my college class. Okay, no more false dichotomies, better thinking, less worrying. Yes, you're teaching your children. Yes, they're playing, they think, while you're teaching them. It's all good. Just have, well, we always said, an enriched environment, right? So you're not going to throw your kid out in the dusty street with a stick. and nothing else to develop their mind. You're going to let them explore the world. You're going to talk to them. You know, you're going to do developmentally appropriate things. Okay? And you don't have to be fixated in getting them to sit down and be still. Because if you give them important things to do, they will focus and settle down. And if they're not, then you need to find out why not. You know, are you giving them too much red dye or other synthetic foods? Or are they allergic to something or whatever? Now, a certain amount of flitting about is normal for a two-year-old. But a four-year-old is going to sit down and focus on something. Okay? So, no more false dichotomies. I hope we're going to be all happy. And I have taught about how to teach reading and writing and some things about homeschooling. And I put those episodes together as a product. So you can go to the website at www.overcominglearningproblems.org or www.greatshalom.org. It's that same site. It's just that not everybody understood what great shalom meant or was supposed to mean. So it's overcoming learning problems. And okay, so I'm helping homeschool moms who are new and helping preschool educators who have been badly educated. That's what's happening in the colleges of education. Okay, so go there, avail yourself of that. Glad I could help. And it looks like you've got me going. I've got some more things to say about false dichotomies. I'm going to talk about reading lists for elementary, middle school children. That's the conversation going on with the mothers who have their children in government schools here. And I don't know why they still do that, but there is a big conversation, and you know there is an Exodus movement. So we're going to talk about that next time. Don't miss that. We'll see you there.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come.
I know you want to get my Dangerous Times Secrets to Victory for Parents and Educators. You need it. It will revolutionize the way you deal with your children or teach your class. I guarantee it. Vital Teaching, 4 CDs in a set, $50. Write me at P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas 78630. And an update, it is now downloadable. If you just go to the website, www.overcominglearningproblems.org, and for a little better price, too. Okay. Help to teachers, help to moms, help to students. Be blessed. Amen.